0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Brendan Rodgers says patience is key to Celtic's summer business. Rangers jet off to the Netherlands for pre-season, but will there be further delays to their Ibrox return? And St Johnson's US takeover has been completed. I'm Andrew McLean. Joining me in the studio tonight is Roger Hannah.
Yeah, it sort of feels like high summer, doesn't it? Wimbledon's still going on. We're about to have a fortnight of the Scottish Open and then the Open Championship at Royal Troon. But the football just around the corner. Rangers, as you see, Andrew, already in the Netherlands. We've got the Premier Sports Cup kicking off this weekend. Jimmy Thelen, David Gray starting their new eras as Aberdeen and Hibs managers with long trips away. And it's not going to be too long till Celtic head over to the United States for some glamour pre-season games of their own.
Yeah, it's quite amazing to think that's the competitive stuff underway this week. Yeah. Saturday, the first Premier Sports Cup games will be taking place. All the teams that, of course, aren't in European action will be playing. So I'm sure there will be some fans that will be very excited to see their team. There may be other fans that are slightly concerned that they feel they could do with a bit more transfer business before this weekend rolls around.
Yeah, but listen, every fan of every club will say that they could do with a little bit more transfer business to be done. Celtic supporters will probably phone in and say, we'll have any transfer business to be done, please, incoming. I know Brendan Rodgers addressed that after the friendly at United on Friday night. They go to the City Stadium to take on Queen's Park next on Wednesday night, and Celtic fans will want players in, notably a number one.
Yeah, well, let's hear from you. 0141 951 1025. Whether it is transfers that are on your mind, the business that your team is doing, the business that you want your team to do, give us a call on that number. You can tweet us at ClydeSSB. Maybe you're interested in the Ibrox story that seems to be rumbling on and will be for a good while. I think Rangers, of course, not set to play their games at Ibrox. Lots of talks going underway at the moment to see where they're going to be playing their football at the start of the season. And maybe you're just interested in the competitive stuff getting back underway this weekend. 0141 951 1025, or you can tweet us at ClydeSSB. Should we start by hearing from Brendan Rodgers? You mentioned that he was speaking on Friday night, the first we've heard from Brendan Rodgers after, or since last season, really. He was speaking after that 1-1 draw against Ayr United in a friendly, a much changed Celtic side as well, wasn't it? Because not all the players are back yet. Some have been given extended leave because of international duty. Alistair Johnson's still on international duty with Canada as well. So let's hear from Brendan Rodgers. Says plenty of work is going on behind the scenes as they look to bring players in. He says it's important to be patient to get the right ones in the door.
Well, listen, as soon as any players come in, you guys will be the first to know about it. Until then, there's just a lot of work going on behind the scenes. Players target it, clear over the obviously last numbers of months, so just hopefully can get those done. But lots of time, but of course we would want to get them in sooner rather than later, but it's always a two-way thing, so hopefully we can get them done in the coming weeks. That's the plan. I think every manager would like them in the first day, but what's most important, the players that we want are targeted. We know what we want to bring in to improve the squad, and I'm sure over the coming weeks we'll conclude the deals and like I said, get us stronger for next season. We could have had 9 players in by now if we wanted, but it's all about the right players that we want to improve the squad. There's no point in us doing anything other than that, and sometimes that takes a little bit of patience. And in the world nowadays where everything's immediate, everyone thinks you can do it straight away, but it's not always the case. There's always a collaboration between ourselves and another club to get the players that we want. But I'm very hopeful that come the end of the window we'll have a really strong squad and be ready and prepared for the for exciting season.
It's always easy to ask for patience, isn't it? But supporters always want, Brendan Rodgers said it himself, we're sort of in a mindset at the moment where everyone wants everything done instantly. There will be fans that want players through the door now, but Brendan Rodgers saying, you know, Celtic could have had 9 players in the door already, but they're waiting for the right ones.
Yeah, well, we don't traditionally do patience very well in Scottish football, Andrew. Celtic, listen to Brendan, Brendan would like players in, but he does want the right players in. 4 weeks before Celtic play a competitive game. It's not like the old days when there was rounds and rounds of Champions League qualifiers for them in the middle of July. They don't play until, I think it's Kilmarnock come to Celtic Park for the flag unfurling day on Sunday the 4th of August. That's 4 weeks. So they do have a period of time to get the right players in them. But a few players out, remember, you know, Rocco Vatter, the latest, just away last week to Watford. So you can imagine Brendan will want a few players in, keep the squad numbers up, but he will take his time and try and identify the ones that he wants.
Are you surprised that there aren't any so far? Would you have expected that there would have been one or two, or does Brendan Rodgers just sound pretty relaxed and there's plenty of time and he knows there's work being done?
It doesn't surprise me, no. It's a strange summer, you know, we've got Euros still going on. You touched on Alistair Johns, you know, the Copa America is still going on as well. You saw that mix and match Celtic team that you spoke about at Somerset Park on Friday night, simply because some players are back, some players are still on holiday, some players have started to go on holiday. It's a very, very sort of staggered return for the Celtic squad. I would imagine it would be the same at Queen's Park on Wednesday night. And even by the time Celtic go away, you know, they won't have everybody back. There was Cameron Carter-Vickers just going away on his holiday after the USA get knocked out the Copa America the other day. Alistair Johnson will need a break of some sort, I think. Celtic like to give their players 3 weeks off, so it wouldn't really surprise me if Alistair Johnson wasn't really seen until that first weekend of the season.
Is it easier to be relaxed as well when you're coming off a season where you've won the title, you've won a double,
yeah,
you were the best team in the country on that season? If you're the team that's chasing, then maybe that's where people start to get a bit more impatient.
Yeah, and they haven't lost a whole raft of key performers. You know, you think last summer Celtic lost Jota, they lost Carl Starfelt, two guys who had been integral parts of title-winning squads, with the exception of Joe Hart, and Celtic have known since February that Joe Hart was going. With the exception of Joe Hart, really the spine of that double-winning team is still there. I know Adamida's gone. I would expect Adamida to get back. I know Paulo Bernardo's gone. He was a French player. Wouldn't surprise me if he came back as well. I think Celtic fans will obviously demand three or four in. I think the one they'd like is a goalie. They want to know who's going to be replacing Joe Hart.
01419511025 on the phones. Brian is first up, a Celtic fan in Stirling. How are you, Brian?
Rather well, thanks very much for asking. Good evening to you.
Hi, Brian.
Andrew.
Hello.
Well, I wanted to speak about I want to first of all paint the picture. I am not an unappreciative Celtic fan. I'm not on here to bitch and moan about who's buying at what time. But I'm looking at the 7 years. So the last 7 years, if you take the influx of players that have come in, we had this staccato that we seem to have a wee bit of back. We had that staccato 4 years where you just at the end of it, just picking up at the very end, and you know, and it always worked, obviously, because we won the league, obviously, with the exception of the COVID season, and it always works. But it leaves us within a framework. It leaves us within a certain level that we're either stuck at or we refuse to move off of. And in that, I mean that, in order for us to obtain the money, right, and I'll take you back just a wee bit to Van Dijk. I hope you're staying with me on this thread. Van Dijk left us and he went down to Southampton for £20 million, or about 22 by the time it all was rinsed out and you got your monies on the kickbacks and everything. But he went from Southampton to Liverpool for nearer £70 million.
Now, I don't think it was quite as much as 20 million, was it, Roger, from Celtic to Southampton? Was it about 12.5 million, I think, at the time? But carry on, Brian.
I think you'll find that when the kick-ons, when the sell-ons were on, Celtic actually were up there around about 20 million, 19-something, with all the add-ons. But my problem was, that is because of the determination of Celtic to pay a certain amount, which determines on a sell-on value. So what we need to do is look at the players coming in. We need to move up a level. And it's not about keeping players. I mean, this whole thing, well, we need to keep this player, we need to keep that player. What we need to do is continue to elevate onto the levels so that the fans, because one day, when the product is not as good as it should be, one day the fans will look away. Something else will take them on and all the money in the world will not put them back. If the product on the park and making it as good as it was, the reason why I'm a Celtic supporter is because the Lisbon Lions shone the light. Then I saw Paul McStay and I saw, you know, Charlie Nicholas and I saw Henrik Larsson And so all of these people make me want to go to football. Now we seem to be looking at football being a game to stop players like that coming through. And where it's we need a level up. That's what I'm saying. We don't need to be winning in Scottish football by just a wee bit. We need to be winning by a distance and then get to that level in Europe where we can push forward.
How hard is it to level up, Roger? Because we've seen some of the fees, and we say it all the time, spending money doesn't always guarantee that the player's going to be great. We've seen players like Matt O'Reilly come in for, you know, $1.5 million. Yeah. It's been very good for Celtic. Clubs have spent big fees on players and they've been disappointing. But to get to that next level, competing at Europe that Brian's talking about, sometimes it does just take spending more money. Yeah. And with more money comes higher wages. And
yeah, it does. But also, spending a bit more probably gives you a better chance of getting quality. And, you know, we mentioned him a minute ago as having left last summer. Jota, Celtic pushed the boat out after the initial loan fee, paid £6 million for Jota. Big fee for Celtic. But look what happened last summer. They got, you know, £25 million for him. Cameron Carter-Vickers, again, a loan. Celtic then again pushed the boat out, £6 million-ish for Carter-Vickers. But he's by far and away Celtic's best defender. And if Celtic decided they wanted to sell Cameron Carter-Vickers tomorrow, they would make a profit in that £6 million. So I understand the point Brian's making. And it'll be interesting to see now that this is Brendan's first real summer of spending again. You know, last season, a lot of those young project players were probably on the way in before Brendan came back to the club. Now he's in full charge of the incoming transfers. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, the first bid was knocked back for Adam Ida last week. How high will Celtic go for Ida? If they want Bernardo, how high will they go for Bernardo? Because these are two guys of very good age where if they kick on under Brendan Rodgers, I'm not going to say you're going to get £25 million for these players, but you could probably sell them on at a profit again if you're willing to pay the actual fees to bring them in.
Is that what you're looking for this summer, Brian? Is it for Celtic to spend more than they previously have?
Absolutely. I think if you've got the money, if you've got the players identified and you can have those players into your club, the quicker the better, because Celtic, it's not about so much overspending, it's about finding the quality. And if it costs just that bit more than what the ceiling of the wages, then you need to lift the ceiling slightly, or even a big bit. Lift it enough that keeps the bums on seats. Because like I say, the game, I've watched this Euro Championships, and I'm not saying it's like the same as the SPFL and the English F, but I've watched them, and the game is sliding towards stopping people playing football. I don't want that in Scotland. I want to see the Jotas. I want to see, you know, Hatate when he's out, when the Kyogos. But I want to see this flow of player and the standard of player increasing. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but that staying in one place, because the model works and it works so well. Like I say, I would hate to be a fan of another club or any other club, because we've won so much. And it's not an unappreciative call, guys. This is where do we go pushing on? We seem to be a wee bit stuck in that one place. Can we just be a bit braver and push on by just a wee bit more quality, guys? And then if we've got a sale price and we're paying that higher wage, we've got a sale price that's through the roof. I mean, because they say, £25 million in Scotland, but a guy went down, as you know, I mean, like we sold a guy down to Arsenal, BKMT, £25 million. That should be the starting price with some of these players if they're good enough. Do you know what I mean?
One of the problems about bringing players in, though, I mean, I'll take you down to Newcastle. Now, there's a couple of what I would describe as fringe players at Newcastle. The lad Elliot Anderson, who Steve Clark tried to convince to come and play for Scotland, and pardon me, a young winger, a guy called Yankubu Minte, who has yet to play for Newcastle's first team. Now you would think these are guys who are in the fringes of a top 10 English Premier League team, can't get a game there. You would think maybe these are the guys who a Celtic or a Rangers could go for, Brian, bring them up, improve them and sell them on. Elliot Anderson and Yankubu Minteh were sold last week for a combined price of £68 million. It's miles beyond what Celtic and Rangers can afford. Miles beyond. And that's why Celtic and Rangers find it so difficult to get the quality of player you're speaking about within a price range that's even close to what they can afford.
Brian was talking about, you know, maybe pushing the boat out on wages when it comes to new players as well. Can that be quite tough in a club structure? Because if you then go out and spend big money on a player and then put them on big wages, you might all of a sudden have guys that have been at the club for a while saying, well, you know, if this new player's come in and is on X amount, then I feel I should be on X amount, and then it can cause a bit of an issue.
100%. And this is maybe why Celtic, you know, look to developing markets. You brought players in from Japan, they brought the players in from South Korea. Matt O'Reilly, you mentioned, Andrew, from MK Dons. These are guys who are on lower wages than the average Celtic first team player. So when they come to Celtic, they're getting a little knock on, and it's an attractive move for them. But, and you know, within not a great deal of time, they then look beyond it. Look at, you know, Jota last summer, Starfield last summer, want to go to leagues where they'll be paid better. And there was those quotes again this morning from Mario Hitati, 26 years of age now, saying in the not too distant future, he wants to go not to a bigger club, but to a bigger league, you know, in England, a Spain, and Italy. That's where he sees the next step of his career.
Well, thank you very much to Brian. I will apologise for any offensive language that may have slipped out of the start of Brian's call as well. But Celtic fans, if you've got any thoughts on that, give us a call, 01419511025. Rangers fans, maybe you've got some thoughts with your team heading off to the Netherlands for pre-season. Of course, lots of talk about Ibrox and what's going to be happening with that as well. Fans of any other club, we want to hear from you as well. 01419511025.
01419511025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna here with me, Andrew McLean, in the studio on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard, brought to you by UK Debt Expert. In the time it takes to play a match, 145 people will have asked them for help with their finances. Their free debt advice has helped over 250,000 people and counting. So if you're struggling with debt you can't control, talk to UK Debt Expert. There is a solution for you. Check out ukdebtexpert.co.uk. We heard a bit from Brendan Rodgers earlier on in the show. We'll hear from him again because he's been talking specifically about Celtic's goalkeeping situation. He says they aim to strengthen that by the start of the season.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the areas that we needed to improve, and we've known that since Joe said that he was leaving. So that again, a bit of time, but we aim to have that hopefully done by the beginning of the season for sure. Well, there's loads of names flying about, so no, just a good one would be nice.
Kasper Schmeichel?
Hey?
Kasper?
Kasper's a very, very good one. I know Kasper really well, but there's lots of names, and clearly I'm not going to tell you who those names are.
Yeah, I think that seems like the obvious place when you look at Celtic squad of where they need to strengthen. Brendan Rodgers well aware of that. Work is well underway in that department. The fact that Brendan Rodgers says, you know, they'll be hoping to get someone in by the start of the season rather than, you know, heading off to America, is that a position you'd maybe want someone in a bit sooner than the start of the season?
Listen, I think they'll want two in. I think Benji Seagrass will probably leave the club as well. So I would imagine, you look at the team, you know, Scott Bain was in goal down at Ayr at the weekend, a couple of younger goalies on the bench. You would think it would be the same on Wednesday night. I think Celtic will want two in. I think they'll want a number one who will, for me, cost a bit of money. I don't think it'll be the same sort of age profile as a Joe Hart or a Kasper Schmeichel. I think it may be a younger guy, at the peak of his powers, if you like, who will give Celtic 4 or 5 years of the best, if you know what I mean. And then a younger goalie to back him up, I would think. I'm told the goalkeeping department at Lennox Town have been through videos of just about every goalkeeper you have ever heard of, Andrew, in the 5 months since Joe Hart announced he was going to be leaving the club. I'm sure it will be narrowed down. I'm sure it will have a list to go through. And as Brendan said right at the top of the show, if that takes them to the start of the season, so be it, if they want to get the right guy in.
Celtic fans, any thoughts on that? Give us a call, 01419511025. Jeff is a Rangers fan up next. Jeff, what are you thinking tonight?
Right, I've just heard And I've seen in the papers today that it will be October before Ibrox is ready. Now, if that is the case, where are they going to play the home games? And if it's going to be Murrayfield, I will not be going to the home games because of the travelling. I would just like to, I would like Rangers to tell us what's happening. If Hampden is available, are we going to be playing at Hampden?
Yeah, I mean, that is the big question that a lot of Rangers fans will be asking Roger is where are Rangers going to be playing their games? Because there will need to be a lot of logistical work done no matter where it is. Jeff says that if it is through at Murrayfield, he won't be attending matches. Yeah. I don't think Jeff will be the only person in that scenario.
Jeff, you could go to Murrayfield just now because that's where the end of the queue of irate Rangers fans is at the minute. You're not the only one who wants to know. Every Rangers fan wants to know. I don't think it does the club any credit whatsoever that there's just a wall of silence round about this issue at the minute. I was actually saying to Andrew off air before the show, I don't think it's dawned on a lot of Rangers supporters the significance and severity of this story. I think, you know, a lot of Rangers supporters have been on holiday just now, still the first couple of weeks of the school break. It seems an awful long time until that first home league game against Motherwell. I think it's the 10th of August it's penciled in for, Jeff. My suspicion, and it is only a suspicion, is that it will be at Hampden, simply because, as you made your first point, Rangers fans don't want to go to Murrayfield. They don't want to go to Edinburgh. Rangers fans already pay quite enough money to the football club for season tickets, for hospitality, for merchandise, for everything that goes with supporting their football club. They don't want the extra expense of having to go to Edinburgh. I think Rangers might have to just bite the bullet and go to Hampden, pay for this new pitch. Pitch at the minute is being relayed after the concerts of the summer. The initial idea at Hampden was to actually plant it with grass seed and let it grow. That takes 6 to 8 weeks. Rangers don't have 6 to 8 weeks. So if Rangers want to go to Hampden, Rangers are going to have to pay to lay down a pitch. They're probably going to have to compensate people who won't be able to get to games. There's then the added complication of hospitality. Are they able to offer at Hampden the same hospitality packages they would have done at Ibrox? Even down to the minutiae, things like who serves you your bowl of soup? Is it the same people who are contracted to do so at Ibrox? Because there's another company contracted to do that at Hampden. So there are a whole heap of questions that you want answered. Every single Rangers fan wants answered. And at the minute, Rangers aren't communicating because they don't have the answers.
I'm sure it would have been a big enough concern for Rangers fans like Jeff at the suggestion that, you know, it would be the first month of the season that Rangers would have to move away from Ibrox. There's now suggestions that it could take until October now.
Write this down, Jeff. This is July the 8th. This story will dominate the first half of next season because no one knows when Rangers will be back at Ibrox. That is a major problem. Now, we were discussing there the problems for the Rangers board in terms of finances. This is a major problem for Philip Clement and the players because they want to play at Ibrox in front of a big home support. Playing at Ibrox gives them a massive advantage over the majority of other clubs. They don't want to be playing home games away from home, if you know what I mean. And all it will take early in the season is a couple of slip-ups. You know, not having those Champions League qualifiers at Ibrox, the major disadvantage to Rangers. So even in a sporting context, a football context, this is a huge problem for Rangers.
Jeff, can you see this having a huge negative effect on Rangers both on and off the park?
Yeah, I do, but what worries me now is what's going to happen in the Champions League qualifiers. Do we have a stadium to play in? And if we don't, are we going to get seriously fined for not having a stadium to play in? It's things like that.
You won't be fined. I mean, look at the past. I think when the Commonwealth Games were at Celtic Park in 2014, Celtic played Champions League qualifiers at Tynecastle. Hearts have played European games at, sorry, I said Tynecastle, I meant Murrayfield. Hearts, when Tynecastle wasn't available, played European games at Murrayfield. There won't be a problem, you know, there won't be any punishment. You're talking about a fine from anyone for Rangers playing European games. I think the problem comes and it's just a sporting disadvantage for Rangers.
Yeah, you would imagine that any deal that Rangers are currently trying to strike would, they would want to include every single game in that, with that being league games, with that being cup games, with that being
European
games, which there are more of this season as well, when you look at the group stages as well. But it's not always as easy as that, because if you're using a venue that's owned by someone else, there will be events that are already 100%. In the calendar. So there are a lot of obstacles that Rangers are going to have to try and get past here.
And the historic arrangement between Hampden and Queen's Park as well. Queen's Park are going to start the season at Lesser Hampden City Stadium, as it's now called, because they were going to let the Hampden surface knit in. They weren't going to play any of their championship games there until after Scotland played Poland in the Nations League on the 5th of September. If there's a pitch there, the Queen's Park get into it earlier than they were going to? Who, you know, if, I haven't looked at the fixtures in any great detail. Could Queen's Park and Rangers both be at home in the same days? If that's the case, do Rangers games move to the Sunday? That again is going to disadvantage Jeff and all the other Rangers fans who might think they've got a game at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Oh no, it isn't. So, suddenly it's a Sunday. You know, this is going to be a major, major inconvenience for everyone associated with Rangers.
Well, thank you very much to Jeff. Kenny is a Hearts fan up next in Airdrie. Kenny, what have you got for us tonight?
Evening, guys.
Hi, Kenny.
Hope you're enjoying your summer. I'm thinking, you know, when Hearts were building the new main stand at Tynecastle, I can't remember. I don't know if any of you can remember, but was there any fines or anything sanctioned because they ran past the completion dates, you know, when the new stand was getting built?
In terms of
sanctions from the football authorities, Kenny?
I don't think so.
I
think there was quite, obviously there was a bit of a ribbon, you know, about the fiasco when it was going on and that. I just find it quite embarrassing, you know, that, as we say, the big two in Scotland, but I just find it terrible that last season they were, you know, really having a dig at Dundee with the state of their pitch, and then they can't play games for, 3 months at their own ground?
I do think the Hearts case is a lot more relevant than the Dundee one. The Dundee one was obviously their pitch. It was down to weather, but drainage really, but games couldn't be played at the time that they were scheduled to be played at. I think that's where the big issue comes when you look at the Hearts situation back in the 2016-17 season, I think it was. It came about early enough that when the fixtures first came out, the SPFL actually worked with Hearts and gave Hearts their first four league games of the season away from home. I think maybe only one of their first nine league games was a home game, and that was at Murrayfield. They then played, I think, was it three games in Murrayfield only? So I think that was up to November. Yeah. So they essentially only played three games at home by the time it got to November. Three of them were at Murrayfield. The SPFL certainly had worked with Hearts. There didn't seem to be any sanctions. It was, I don't know, the SPFL seemed to, they couldn't do it this time round because the Rangers essentially alerted them after the fixtures had come out. So that was the difference in terms of that scenario.
What I was going to ask you, I mean, Kenny, I was just speaking to the previous caller who was a Rangers fan, Jeff. You know better than me the advantage Hearts have at Tynecastle. Great atmosphere, drives the players on, and you missed that atmosphere when you went to play at Murrayfield. Now, wherever Rangers go to play, whether it is at Murrayfield, whether it's at Hampden, that won't be as beneficial to Rangers as playing at Ibrox. I mean, as a Hearts fan, will Hearts and Stephen Naismith think, tell you what, this might be the season where we can split the old firm?
Why not? I think what's been quite impressive regarding Hearts this season or prior to the season starting is all the early, getting all the players in early, getting them all tied up. Obviously, now they're away in their summer break, but I think it's been quite a good business for Hearts in that side.
Be interesting to see. Dander's a good player. I liked him at Ross County. Spittle was outstanding for Motherwell last season. I haven't seen quite as much about the lad Penrice, who came in from Livingston. The young right-back that came from Brentford, I don't know at all. But certainly Stephen Naismith has got the business done early. And he'll also be happy that the sort of spine of that team is retained as well, notably your captain and top scorer.
Oh, 100%. You know, but I think we're all sort of patiently waiting to see that nobody comes in and Shanklin's still there for the, you know, to the remainder of his contract at least. But I know that they've offered him a couple of extensions over the time. But, you know, he's at an age where he's got to think of his future. You know, as well as say, Pip was a short career here, but I think Shankland will do quite well for himself, whether he stays at Hearts or moves on, because he's going to have the European games to look forward to as well.
Yeah, is that the biggest concern for you this summer, Kenny, with some business already being done? Obviously a good foundation from last season. Is Shankland the main one on your mind, hoping that he can still be there come the end of the transfer deadline?
Oh, 100%. You know, he seems to give everybody a lift. I mean, I know they say he's not got much pace in that, but let's be honest, 63 goals in two seasons isn't a bad return.
Yeah, he's been absolutely fantastic, and having a goal scorer like that just gives everyone a lot more confidence if you know you've got someone who's capable of scoring 30 goals in a season.
Yeah, I mean, I used to say, if you take the whole thumb out of it, Andrew, if you could get a striker at any of the other Premiership clubs who would get you 15 goals a season, he's worth his weight in gold. I mean, there's Kenny making the point. Shankland's got 63 in two seasons. I mean, he's been phenomenal for Hearts. He's been Hearts' best striker since John Robertson in his pomp in the mid to late 80s. That's how good he's been. If he can continue in that vein, he'll get in as a Hearts legend.
Well, thank you very much to Kenny. Before the break, let me tell you about this. Clyde One. Yes, today was day one of Make Me a Winner, a call worth £100,000, but it went unanswered, meaning that it's going to be a rollover. It's good news for you. At least we can make you a winner of £110,000 tomorrow when we make another call. But you need to be in the draw to enter. Text YES to 61025, text or £2 plus your standard network rate, or enter at www.hellorail.co.uk. Online entries cost £2. It's over 18s only. Entries since the lines last opened yesterday morning have rolled over. All the rules for this Rail Network competition are on our website. If you get a call from us after 3 p.m. tomorrow, answer within five rings and make sure to say "Make me a winner" straight away to win £110,000, and it'll be paid into your bank account after the call. Text YES to 61025 for your chance to win. Good luck.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Roger Hannah in the studio with me, Andrew McLean. No pundit predictor tonight, but it does continue tomorrow night on Super Scoreboard with Col Robert. It was France that let Scott from Coatbridge down at the weekend as they failed to beat Portugal within the 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. That was the main thing. That means you could be a winner of £1,000 if you play tomorrow. Simply guess the results of the two semi-finals between England and the Netherlands and France and Spain to win the cash. So make sure to listen in tomorrow for that. What did you make of the quarterfinals over the weekend?
I've seen better football, I have to say. The one I enjoyed best was probably the last one, the Netherlands against Turkey. Turkey getting the goal and then that storming comeback. I didn't think England were great, limped through in penalties. I didn't think France were great, limped through in penalties. I think Spain still look the team to beat, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of just talks about the overall quality of Euro 2024. It started out very promising, didn't it, with the first few games of the tournament?
Yeah.
But was an earlier caller was just talking about teams maybe trying more to stop other teams than doing more to attack.
Brian,
we've seen that a lot.
Yep.
A lot of the big teams have maybe gone a bit more defensive or
certainly
a bit
in the
more
knockout
cautious.
Stages, yeah, they definitely have, Andrew. And it's not for the betterment of the, you know, of making it more of a spectacle, unfortunately.
I'm trying to think, is it revisionism looking back on tournaments, you know, a few years ago that they were better, or do you just remember the highlights? Do you just remember the big moments? You don't remember sitting watching 90 minutes of whatever else?
I don't think this one will go down as one of the great tournaments, put it that way. I think there have been poor Euros in the past, and I remember Greece winning a sort of dull win many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. Was that Euro 2004 maybe in Portugal?
Yeah, didn't play overly well pretty much throughout the whole tournament.
That was right. But no, there have been great Euros. I remember Euro 2008 when Spain won their first major tournament, Fernando Torres scoring against the Germans, and then 4 years later they successfully defended it when they beat Italy 4-0 in the final. A great Spanish team, legendary Spanish team winning back-to-back Euros. Those were good competitions. I think when Portugal won it 2016, I think was a good win, but not so much this one.
France haven't scored a goal from open play since March, I read somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're in the semi-finals of a European Championship.
Absolutely bonkers. Penalties and own goals.
Yeah, that's incredible. Right, back to Scottish football. 01419511025. Kevin is in Chapel Hill. How are you, Kevin?
Good evening. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Hi, Kevin.
All good.
What I would like to say is I've listened to all the jargon about transfers. I think the problem with Scottish football lies clearly at places like Lennox Town, Murray Park, Easter Road, Tynecastle. They're producing no young players. What we need to do is invest in good European qualified youth coaches. We've got to start producing our own young players.
I heard after the Euros when Scotland got knocked out in that defeat against Hungary, Kevin, I think it was John Collins that was interviewed, and John Collins made a very similar point to you, making the sort of point that for Scottish football to get better, you need better players, you need to sort of, you know, develop young players. And I know the point you're making, but if you are, and we had Kenny DeJambo on a minute ago, if you are Stevie Naismith, the Hearts manager, or if you are Jimmy Thelen, the new Aberdeen manager, David Gray, the new Hibs manager, it takes a bit of courage to put homegrown 16, 17, 18 year olds into your team, because if it doesn't work out well for you, you're going to get sacked. And where does that leave you? So, you know, I agree with you. Big picture, if you're going to get better Scottish players, you need to develop them. You need to get them into your first teams at a very young age and progress them. But it takes a very brave club manager to actually put his own future on the line by putting these kids into the team. There was, I mentioned Stephen Naismith at Hearts. He's got a young lad, is it James Wilson, mm-hmm. who came on for a few games off the bench towards the end of last season. But in that sense, Hearts were secure at third. They couldn't get second, they couldn't get fourth. So it was an easy time for Naisy to put him into the team. You don't often see kids of that age getting exposed to first team football simply because the pressures that clubs put on their managers.
Because we have seen some success stories over the past season. You look at Lennon Miller, who's been fantastic at Motherwell. You look at David Watson, who's
David
been brilliant
Watson
at Kilmarnock.
Wasn't playing regularly in the second half of last season. You know, started more games in the bench.
When you look at Celtic and Rangers in particular, there is a pressure from inside both of those clubs and outside both of those clubs that they should be winning every single game. Yeah. They should be winning every single competition they're in. The managers are made well aware of that when they come in. How tough is that for a manager to balance, knowing that you're going into every single game with an expectation to win, but then also thinking, well, we might have some young players that I want to throw in, but is it the right environment to put them in? If I put them in and it doesn't work out, then how negatively will that impact me?
This has always been the issue, hasn't it? You look at Celtic in the last 5 years, there's Rocco Vatter, admittedly not a Scottish player, plays for the Republic of Ireland, but he was a young Lennox Town developed player who couldn't get into the first team because of the pressures that surround Celtic and has now moved elsewhere. Karamoko Dembele before him couldn't get into the first team because of the pressures. Now, there's no criticism in the Celtic management. Celtic management have to do what's best at that moment for the Celtic first team. But a lot of these young players get fed up and go elsewhere. Billy Gilmour couldn't get into the Rangers team when he wanted to at 16, couldn't get a sniff at it, moved away to Chelsea. So it's a fine balancing act. But the basic point Kevin's making is correct. For Scottish football to improve, we need better young players, and we need people who are courageous enough to put them into the first teams.
There is also the flip side of when young players have been produced by Scottish clubs and look very good at the age of 15, 16, that they get poached by clubs down south because the bright lights and the money takes them down south. You look at Ben Doak, who made a couple of appearances under Ange Postecoglou at the age of 16, came off the bench against Rangers. Billy Gilmour was not quite in Rangers match day squads, but he certainly, I remember, was it Graham Murty had brought him along and had him training out on the pitch at the age of 15 to try and keep him there. So there are players being produced as well, but sometimes they're maybe not given the opportunities, or sometimes their head is turned by English clubs down south.
And their head is turned by money, by going to bigger contracts with, you know, under 18, under 21, under 23 squads down there. You mentioned David Watson there. I'm thinking of Charlie MacArthur, who came through with him at Kilmarnock, taken away by Newcastle United. Now, miles and miles away from Newcastle United's first team, be playing in the under 23s, he'll be going out on loan somewhere, I don't doubt. But that's a lad who may well have been in Kilmarnock's first team, but chose not to take that pathway and to go elsewhere. And you could get through it. I think, you know, Aberdeen have lost players like this in the past. A lad went down to Leeds United, whose name escapes me in a minute. Celtic have lost players. There was a lad, Josh Adam, who went to Manchester City two or 3 years ago, as well as Ben Doak. It's difficult for clubs.
Kevin, as a Celtic fan, is that something you'd rather see Celtic do, is throw in some of their own youth academy products than, you know, maybe being as active in the transfer market? Is it striking the right balance?
No, I listened to one of your points there of a manager being frightened to put a boy in. But the point I'm trying to make is, if you have got a good qualified coach and he comes to you and says, these boys are ready, surely you would listen to him.
There's only so much that youth coaches can influence as well, isn't there, and first team managers. I don't know if there are youth coaches out there that would be brave enough to turn to Philip Clement or to turn to Brendan Rodgers and say, by the way, this guy's brilliant, throw him in.
I accept all of that, but it's not the youth coach who's going to lose his job if things go awry. It's the first team manager who's going to lose his job, and that sort of probably dominates their thought process. I would love to see more young Scottish players in. I remember a couple of seasons ago we were raving about the lad, the young centre-back Dylan Smith, come into the team at Ross County, but he's disappeared again. You know, we do get excited when a Lennon Miller comes through, a David Watson comes through. Aberdeen fans were excited by Fletcher Boyd, you know, 16 years of age, scored a couple of goals at the end of last season. Again, though, when the pressure was off and Aberdeen could no longer get into the top six, the kid was thrown into the team. I'll be fascinated to see how much action he gets under Jimmy Fallon at the start of the season. I'd love to see him get a whole heap of first team action, but the pressures that fall on Aberdeen managers, you would doubt it.
Kevin?
Well, I really can't argue with you, but my grandson plays football in Dubai. He's resident there, and he's coached by the Real Madrid player Delgado.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think we'll get any coaches in Scotland that come up to that kind of mark.
I think that being a good player back in the day doesn't always make you a good coach. There's some brilliant coaches that weren't, you know, didn't play to a high level at all. But I suppose a lot of it comes down to money as well, and how much clubs are willing to invest and how much they have invested. And, you know, we've seen, certainly, you know, Rangers has, was it Zeb Jacobs that came in as their head of academy? He's since left, and Rangers are trying to fill that. Celtic have maybe gone more down the route of former players, haven't they, in filling those youth team roles?
And it's difficult. You know, youth development is notoriously hard. How do you want to develop your players? Celtic, along with Hearts, I've chosen the route of taking B teams into the Lowland League. Rangers tried it, didn't like it, came back out, tried to develop players a different way. But it's a notoriously hard thing to do, Andrew.
Well, thank you very much to Kevin. That is all we've got time for tonight. But thank you for listening in. Thank you for your calls. Thank you for your tweets. Thank you to Roger Hanna in the studio as well. I'll be back tomorrow night to do it all again with Gordon DL, who I don't think we've heard from since the return from Germany. We'll need to see how he's feeling after his 2 week stint in Germany. It's not often he's out the country for that long.
No, his 2 week stint was absolutely terrific. I watched all of his social media content, listened to him on the shows. I haven't spoken to him yet. I presumed he was in hiding. I'll listen tomorrow night.
Yeah, we'll see if he's acclimatised back to Motherwell yet. I'm sure he will. I'm sure he's happy with his surroundings. But thank you very much, as I say, for listening in. Remember, you can catch up wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch the whole thing back on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter by searching Clyde 1 SSB, and stay right there because Callum Gallagher's up next with your chance to go and see the script at the Hydro on the big fat quiz of the week.